It's deja vu. This moment's happened before.
You have found the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Hello, and welcome to the Kaleidoscope Gallery, where we exhibit conversations and stories about the real, the surreal, and somewhere in between. I'm your host, Paul, and alongside contributors Dave, Leah, and Hans, we will be exploring the world-famous illusionist who made the Statue of Liberty disappear and his mission to create the Lunar Library, a library on the moon. The Great Power Blackout of 2003 and its connection to street parties, community, and the power of the night sky. And, say this five times fast, tricky tongue twisters and other sublimely surprising sounds of human languages. Then, the placebo effect, and the man who laughed himself well. Medicine, hypnosis, and the mind-body connection. So let's step into the first exhibit, inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
We're not quite sure what's going on. We're going to try to stay calm.
Many of the intersections, the traffic lights are completely out. Thousands of people leaving the city.
When have you ever seen a skyline shot of Manhattan that looked like this?
20 years ago, about 50 million people lost power in the Northeast. The culprit? Tree branches hitting a power line, and a software glitch at an energy company in Akron, Ohio.
What happened when all the lights went out?
Well, it was an exciting first few hours, that's for sure.
New Yorker Ancod Davis was here during the 2003 blackout. He says his neighborhood really bonded that day.
People were totally happy to be out on the street. You know, they had their candles set up. Everybody knew there was no power in the house. There's no reason to be in the house.
Good evening, I'm Peter Mansbridge from downtown Toronto. For the most part, an eerily dark Toronto. We are caught up in one of the biggest blackouts in history. When it will be all over, that's still not clear.
Maybe the world's moving a little too fast. And, you know, it's time to say stop and let's think about what's happening.
Here's the electricity.
We, along with tens of millions of people, will probably never forget what we were doing at 4:11 Eastern Time today.
I think it was the first time they saw the stars. And so many people who'd lived in the city their whole life, for the first time ever, saw what the sky looked like after dark. And it created a sense of bonding, not just with each other, but the universe. It was a spiritual awakening and a moment of truth that had been long awaited and never seen. Like, the thing about Toronto is you got to drive at least 2 hours to get to a nice place where it's you can see dark skies. There's some dark skies, but they're kind of like bleak fields or whatever. And if you go a couple hours north or west or east, you can start to really see the universe unfold. And on that one day in Toronto, the lights went out. It wasn't the fact that you couldn't charge your phone or make a coffee. It was the fact that for the first time ever in downtown Toronto, you could see the universe. And people's minds got blown because not everyone had seen that.
Yeah, I do remember the stars were spectacular that night because not only was the light out in Toronto, the lights were out in all the major cities. It was dark for thousands of kilometers.
Yeah, the Milky Way was on full display.
Now, I know at the time that you lived in Kensington Market, the, I'd say, almost world-famous Kensington Market here in Toronto, which is, we've described it before a few times.
He's King of Kensington!
Well, it's a vegetable market and a spice bazaar and a music scene and that punk steadfast enclave that never dies. It's the jazz and it's trading. It's chicken and fabric. Spice. And specialty foods that you would never have tasted, except that there's like nine grandmothers from nine countries cooking nine foods you've never experienced before.
You lived down there. What was it like for you in your neighborhood when the power went out?
It was a party, for sure. I mean, but it was also an intense time because people for the first time ever saw the sky.
You mentioned something to me about fire. And fire in the streets.
Oh, that's true. That was going on in Kensington that night. There were fires all along Kensington Street. Deliberate street fires, but not fires that were like designed to burn the neighborhood. Fires were designed to light up the night.
We're living in the big city, and of course, we're talking about Toronto. We live near a park called The Grange, and I was listening to the radio, and they're saying, oh, we're down here live at The Grange Park because there's going to be a huge party here tonight, and there's expected to be up to 1,000 people. So I was quite surprised to hear this and wonder what they were celebrating. Why were they having this party? It turns out it was to commemorate the great blackout, the early 2000s, 2003, and they were commemorating the fact that during that fateful night where it was pitch black in downtown Toronto, turns out there was a lot of people downtown who basically they bonded with each other, particularly in the core, big street parties broke out, and giant spontaneous community barbecues began, and there was lifelong bonds formed between those people. And they actually held a party every single year at the Grange Park. So we went and visited it.
We did. There was music and dancing, and it was collective dancing, like giant sort of Celtic conga lines. And
all right, we're in Grange Park. It's a celebration or a commemoration of the 2003 blackout.
Yeah,
somehow.
Great idea.
People who met downtown and became friends during that fateful night, meet here every year to renew that connection to urban celebration and community. Shall we go?
Yeah.
It was like a folk dance or something that everyone knew the moves of. And it was done collectively, and it was done for a long time to these drums and flutes and various reed instruments. And then at one point, they all formed a giant, as you said, conga line, Celtic conga line, and just went in a slow circle around the park.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to the monument.
Snaking around the park, yeah. They went around the Henry Moore art sculpture, yeah.
And everyone began gently banging on it because it's made of resonant metal, hollow metal. So it made this amazing sound, and all of a sudden this brass band, an 8-piece, 10-piece brass band, just emerged from the darkness and...
Yeah, broke into song in another part of the park where people then, you know, moved from their line and congregated.
It was amazing, and it was interesting to see people who were clearly reuniting again. But the organizers, two organizers, one of them said that it was important for them to continue to remember to bring joy to the streets and the urban communities.
Yeah.
And then the other organizer said that on that night, the fateful night when all the power was out,
when everything went dark,
that he had changed from a cynic to a believer in, like, you know, the greater
good of humanity.
In humanity.
Yeah.
It changed him.
Yeah.
So these guys were so moved by that that they've been doing this celebration every year.
Today marks 20 years since Toronto and a portion of North America went dark. In the dark, many Canadians came together trying to bring light to the situation, like Toronto entertainer Michael Lewis Johnson.
I was trying to celebrate my buddy's 30th birthday. We had a big dinner plan when the power went out. And so it was just like, okay, how do we make so this can still happen? So everybody was freaked out.
Johnson says with the unknown, many came together. And that's why they've been throwing a blackout celebration every year since.
Every year, a bunch of us have been throwing a big party to celebrate Toronto the Good.
I was supposed to go to a concert that night. We were getting ready to go, and then the blackout hit. And like many, it was both unsettling and also a really magical, special night as people started to really pull together as a city.
Simia Tiki says it was amazing to see the community come together, but it's also important to remember these moments and learn from them.
That can be one of the lessons learned as well, that 20 years on, we should continue to reflect on what happened there, reflect on the positive aspects of our communities and how we faced that challenge.
It's incredible. I mean, it was a really special event. It was really unique.
It happened in the afternoon, right? Or something like that. Or
very hot day. It was August and it was in the afternoon, late afternoon. I just remember people pouring, like walking up Yonge Street, just thousands of people. They're walking uphill.
Yeah, it's a long walk. We're talking about a walk that would take you 2 hours.
From downtown to where we were? Yeah, yeah.
What was interesting is as the sun set and the real darkness started to approach.
Oh, it was the most glorious, silent, dark urban experience.
But what about as it was becoming dark, you could feel a kind of tension in the city? As some of us were not sure how people would react to being plunged into the darkness in a city of 4 million people. It's a bit of uneasiness, but as we learned, most people, it was a party.
Well, we laid on our back porch area. We laid on our back and just the most incredible stars, dense stars, because it was dark for such a wide swath. It was a sky you'd never see in an urban center. It was incredible. We stargazed.
It was a positive experience for a lot of people. And of course, not everyone should be acknowledged.
It should. You know, it was an anniversary. And so people posted about it on social media. And I saw a lot of positive memories from people. Yes, there were those who walked through train tunnels. And that was not necessarily
Perhaps they had felt sense of camaraderie with their fellow stranded passengers.
It was an incredibly human experience, and people took a lot of positive out of it.
When people were reflecting on this event, most people's experience seems to be rather positive.
I think it was positive, and I think it goes back to that unique moment where it was like camping in the city. It was a 9 million person campsite where everyone was just trying to drink the beers as fast as they can. They worried they weren't going to be cold anymore. I remember the next morning after the blackout was really bad because everybody was hungover because it was a crazy party. It was still no power in Toronto and I couldn't make coffee. So I was like, what am I going to do for coffee? So I set out and like the coffee shops were all still out of power. The only place that had power was the butcher. Because the butcher had a backup generator.
Because of all the meat.
Yeah, all the meat. And I went and I was like, do you have coffee? And they're like, yes, we have coffee. And I'm like, fucking right. And at the time, I still drank my coffee double-double. You know, now I drink it black because it's much better. So get the coffee out of the place. I start sipping. I'm like, this is the worst coffee I've ever had. And what I realized after drinking half of it, instead of sugar, they'd put in salt. This is the problem with buying your coffee at the butcher shop. That was the day after the blackout. That was probably the worst moment. I drank it anyway. I think it was the first time they saw the stars.
You are inside the Kaleidoscope Gallery.
Here's the greatest illusionist in the world, David Copperfield!
Good evening, I'm David Copperfield. And tonight, we're here on Liberty Island. People come to this island by boat, and I've made the trip quite frequently during this past year, getting ready for tonight. A couple of weeks ago, when I was on the boat, a young sightseer, about 7 years old, came up to me and said, "Are you David?" He said he saw me make the car disappear. And then he said he saw me make the jet plane disappear. I thanked him, and I watched as he looked up at the Statue of Liberty, then at me, then back to the statue, and back to me. Finally, he looked me right in the eye and said, "Are you thinking what I think you're thinking?" Well, that's what I was thinking, all right. And tonight, he and I and you are going to find out if it can be done. Can the Statue of Liberty really disappear?
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. David Copperfield.
What was your reaction?
Oh, yes. I was just enchanted. The entire thing has just disappeared. What happened, where it's gone to, I have no idea.
No idea
but
where it
went. It was fascinating to watch it. I have never seen a Statue of Liberty disappear the way this one did.
David Copperfield apparently made the Statue of Liberty completely disappear.
That's a very powerful magic. So does that mean everyone is now no longer free? Like, if the Statue of Liberty is gone, so too are our freedoms.
The world's most famous magician invests in data storage startup that wants to send 100 gigabyte disks to the moon for future humanoids.
Why 100 gigabytes? They can't give him a terabyte?
Legendary magician David Copperfield is throwing his weight behind efforts to scatter human knowledge across the breadth of the solar system for future generations to discover.
On a thumb drive? David Copperfield is doing this? He's sending thumb drives to space?
With climate change, nuclear warfare, and flat earthers looming on the horizon, Earth's not exactly the safest place to store the records of human civilization, so it's being sent to the moon instead. CNET reports that when the Beresheet lunar lander was launched on SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket Thursday, it was carrying a disk encoded with a 30 million page archive of human history and civilization dubbed the Lunar Library. Created by the Arch Mission Foundation, the Lunar Library is a DVD-sized archive composed of 25 nickel film disks that are each only 40 microns thick. According to the foundation, the first four layers contain over 60,000 analog images of documents, photos, books, and illustrations that can be seen with a low-powered microscope. Letters on these layers are the size of a bacillus bacterium.
The Arch Mission Foundation has already planted a nickel-based nanofiche disk on the moon's surface, with such archives serving as a backup for the wealth of human knowledge.
They already had microfiche on the moon, so you could look through old newspapers. So you may as well add the nanofiche so that you can plug in David Copperfield's thumb drive, which only has 100 gigabytes. Therefore, it's got like two of the Police Academy movies on there. And that's it. That's what the aliens will find. Police Academy 2. So what made David Copperfield feel that he could fill the wealth of human knowledge in 100 gigabytes?
Okay, so you can get 60,000 pages of content on each one, but you need to access it with an optical microscope at a zoom of 200 times.
Wait a minute here. To be able to read the books, you need to zoom in 200 times.
Yeah, with a microscope.
This is what people are going to be reading in their beds when they're living on the moon. They have a small microscope, like squinting at the words.
AMF has a history of launching missions stretching back to 2018. It completed the first major installation of its lunar library in 2019 with a 30 million page archive that is now intact on the moon.
The lunar library. Who's acting as the librarian there? That is amazing. Is it free Wi-Fi?
The thinking is that the future inhabitants of Earth or extraterrestrials would discover these archives one day. Then he'd build a DVD player based on the instructions and learn all about the sum of human knowledge, including David Copperfield's secret to success.
Whoa. David Copperfield invented the DVD player? So in 9 days ago, probably 19 years after the DVD was defunct, David Copperfield is filling up a 100-gigabyte thumb drive and trying to transfer it on a DVD. He gets it done. He's like, I got the DVD. And then he, like, frisbees it toward the moon. He gets caught by a couple of space pigeons, transport it into the crater. And then he flies up there using magic and just sits around and reads all day in a tiny, tiny book that he can't even open with his thumb. You need a microscope to read, like, each letter. You can't read words. You have to read it one letter at a time. It takes forever to read. And then when the aliens get there and they look at it, they're like, this was one fucked up species. Like, they couldn't figure out how to like, show a sentence all at once or put something that the naked eye can see.
I mean, it's kind of like a message in a bottle. Because eventually they want to scatter this across the whole solar system.
Yeah, what's the point of scattering it? Like, I'm going to have to fly to the next planet to read the next chapter? Is that the idea? We got to fly to Andromeda 7 to find out what happens next. And then what if you get to there and it's like chapter 8 and then you got to fly back for chapter 7? Like, scattering a book's a terrible idea. I mean, maybe David Copperfield could bring it back together using his magic fingers, but...
Here's the final point we need to realize about this amazing information about David Copperfield and his compressed nanofiches. Hidden within the data are, quote, special vaults, among which are David Copperfield's secrets, which explain the art and science of his illusions, including how... he made the Statue of Liberty disappear.
If he made it disappear, why hasn't anyone noticed? As far as I know, it's still there.
I have never seen a Statue of Liberty disappear the way this one did.
Why is it that most speech can be read out loud quickly with no problem? Why is it that most speech can be read out loud quickly with no problem? Why is it that most speech can be read out loud quickly with no problem? Easy. Other word combinations, no way. Forget it. I wish to wash my Irish wristwatch. I wish to wash my Irish wristwatch. I wish to wash my Irish wristwatch. Tongue twisters. This is a real thing, and it happens in every language. When you put similar sounds together and try to say something quickly or over and over, your brain can't always keep up.
So I hope that you have done your vocal warm-ups today, Leah.
I haven't. I haven't. Do I need to? You taught me a really good one.
Which one is that?
Look to oot. Look to oot. Look to oot oot oops and banoos.
Oh, right. So I like to eat. I like to eat. I like to eat. Eat. Apples and bananas, and then you change the vowel to uluk to oot or ilik ti eat eat eeples and beninis.
I like Thai eat. I like Thai eight. I like Thai eight, eight apples and bananas.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good vocal warm-up.
It's fabulous.
So good. So your voice is a little bit more warmed up now because I have something for you. We've got some special tongue twisters here.
Ooh, say that five times quickly.
One of my favorite ones has got to be Fuzzy Wuzzy. Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair. If Fuzzy Wuzzy had no hair, then Fuzzy Wuzzy wasn't very fuzzy, was he?
There's Peter picked a peck of pickled peppers. That's a classic.
That's the classic.
Peter picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Here's another one. Try this one. Give Papa a cup of proper coffee in a copper coffee cup.
Give Papa a cup of proper coffee in a copper coffee cup. Give Papa a proper cup of coffee in a copper coffee cup. That coffee at the end is...
You try this one. Fresh French fried fly fritters.
Ooh.
Fresh French fried fly fritters.
Fresh French fried fly fritters. Fresh French fried fly fritters. Fresh French fried fly flitters. Fresh French fried fly fritters. Fresh French fried fly flitters. Blah. Who's going to eat fry fritters? I think I said flitters by the end there.
Well, here's another one. 77 benevolent elephants. Who's going to say that? But 77 benevolent... Try that.
77 benevolent elephants. Once you get your lips around benevolent, you can do it.
Can you imagine not just one or two, but 77 benevolent elephants, eh? That's quite the image.
Thank God they're benevolent. If they were angry, you'd be doomed.
Okay, we got one more I want you to try here. Just simply repeat as many times as you can the two words toy, boat.
Toy boat, toy boat, toy boat. Toy boat, 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 toy boat.
I thought this particular site, 75 Tongue Twisters in English, because it's actually a tool to help people who are learning English as a second language to just practice pronunciation.
It really makes your mouth move.
Yeah, and it really gets you to concentrate on those differentiations between the word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speaking of learning another language or hearing another language, what it sounds like, one you don't necessarily understand. But here's, I've got a video of someone in the Middle East. I think it's Iraq, but don't quote me. And it says, Middle Eastern policeman pretending to speak English.
Mr. John, متى يكون انسحاب القوات الأمريكية من العراق بأسرع وقت ممكن؟
Yes, بيكون في مارس 2008
في 3/4 مستر جون، ما الخطة الأمنية التي قضيت على الميليشيات في العاصمة بغداد؟
Yes, 2 8 1 5 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8 2 8
English sounds like to non-English speakers.
Relevant Don spreaded must on Sprexto and tricks an anti-pally at Ponwalk and Lintzburn. In his time, El Spruce to spiel a tell for Spine. Thanks for listening. Quale stazione in particolare legando il benedetto chiamato lo ciud manevato chi prese bene quale lato risata? Risata.
This guy does a really good job of getting the sounds of different languages and speaking gibberish in each one, or taking a word like risotto and saying it, you know, a bunch of times. But obviously there's different accents in every nationality he's representing there, but he manages to pick one and pick a bunch of the sounds associated with it and speak in gibberish. And it's pretty funny.
It's a collection of sounds that have meaning to the speakers and the listeners of that language. But we're all just kind of making noises and sounds.
Yeah, well, the earliest ones, and apparently there are still some languages like this in, amongst certain first peoples of the world. Think bird song you know, just more clicks and sounds and those kinds of ways of articulating meaning.
Our X, it sounds like the name Xhosa, Ingxoxo, Uxamo, Xhoma, Xhosa, Xa, Xe, Xi, Xoxo. And we've got letter Q. Our Q, it sounds like the name Xala, Xeda, Ixhude, Ixhale, Xhala, Ixhole, Xhoma, Xa, Xe, Xi, Xoxo.
You are listening to The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The Kaleidoscope Gallery.
The idea was to treat people in great pain. Volunteers with severe knee arthritis were gathered from around the state and divided into groups. Two groups would have a surgical procedure. The third would be given a placebo, fake surgery. They'd have a general anaesthetic, be opened up, but wouldn't have any real procedure. They would merely think they had. The verdict? Success for every group. Fake or genuine?
During your training, what were you taught about the placebo effect?
Nothing. I had no clue. I went from being a skeptic to a believer. I realized that we were really onto something.
Dr. Mosley had seen patients get better purely because of what was in their minds. It seemed too good to be true. I wanted to see one of the patients who'd been in great pain before having Dr. Mosley's surgery. I wanted to know whether the placebo effect could still hold.
When I first had that pain, when I first, before that, I couldn't do a lot of things I did, like going fishing or going dancing. And after that, I was able to do that.
And what would you say it was that really cured you? Was it Dr. Mosley, or was it you and your mind?
I got to credit Dr. Mosley for doing what he did, but it was my mind that cured the problem.
You took a sugar pill and you were immediately healed.
Yeah.
Well, I think the placebo effect goes back to a topic we've discussed a number of times, which is hypnosis, the power of suggestion, the untapped potentials of the mind. You can take anything and be suggested that that thing will do another thing to you, and you may just believe it if the suggester has suggestiveness or the hypnosis has been affected upon you.
Yeah, you're talking about Ravine, the amazing hypnotist that hypnotized how many millions of people?
I don't know. I don't remember that, but I'll never forget Ravine.
You'll never forget Ravine.
Are you equating the placebo effect with the power of suggestion?
Exactly. I think if you take a sugar pill and someone says it's going to do this to you, there's a reasonable chance that you will manifest that effect through the power of suggestion.
So are we talking about mind over matter?
I think there's something to it for sure. You can think the truth into reality. You can think reality into the truth.
you want controversy these days, just pick a cure. Well, now another new prescription for whatever happens physically to ail you. Laughter. I don't know how the doctor would write it as a prescription, but I do know somebody who administered himself just such medication. Practically a death's door, and now lays claim to having more or less laughed himself well. He's Norman Cousins, and as you can see, in pretty good shape. Over a decade ago, when one doctor gave him one chance in 500 of staying alive, he set out to heal himself of what seems to have been a disease akin to arthritis. He was, in both a personal and medical sense, falling apart until he decided on his own unique treatment to put himself back together again.
I recognized that it was quite possible that the combination of stress, frustration, adrenal exhaustion had played a part in the onset of the illness. So it seemed to me logical to believe that if the negative emotions produced negative chemical changes, that the positive emotions had to produce positive chemical changes. I made some interesting discoveries. I discovered, for example, that 15 minutes of solid belly laughter would produce a natural anesthesia, and that the solid laughter would give me about 2 hours of pain-free sleep. I don't want to make it seem that you can ha-ha your way out of a serious illness. You can't. But I think it is true that one's attitude is extremely important. A well-developed will to live, the ability to find a certain amount of joy in life, the determination to make it, all these things fit together.
Whatever the reasons, Cousins is in good shape today. Not perfect, but good. Today, he can hit a tennis or golf ball without pain in his wrists. And he has enough finger flexibility to play the organ again. What cured him?
I've always been amazed by the idea that there's a placebo effect that you can observe in certain situations. In other words, like the man who laughed himself healthy, there seems to be some kind of, well, some people would say mind over matter, and that your mind itself is convincing your body to make all these changes that are measurable.
Mind over matter is what I used to say, and until recently, when I realized, I've been increasingly realizing, mind is matter, which is why psychosomatic and placebo effects are real, because every thought we have, every feeling we have, there's a neurological, there's a biochemical reaction that happens in your body, and we have receptors for all these things. They're how we're designed. We are embodied to think and feel.
It tells us more about how the neurology and our sort of our mind and body work together.
Mm-hmm. How they're connected
to alleviate certain symptoms, and a lot of those are the sort of subjective ones, such as pain or stress. You can't think yourself out of certain situations.
I think we don't know enough. I think if I were a scientist or a doctor, I'd be putting caveats around all of it too, because you don't, there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation. And
yeah, like Think and Grow Rich.
Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
My search led me to the study of the spiritual forces with which all of us are blessed. And it was in this field that I came upon a clue which has enabled me to help millions of people to find their earthly destinies. I want to describe my discovery in the simplest terms possible, that whatever the mind can conceive and believe, the mind can achieve.
You know, yes, the stories we tell ourselves and the beliefs we have that are unspoken about all sorts of things in our lives, including money, influence how we interact with those things and can influence the outcomes in our lives. But to think that all you have to do is think something and then it's going to magically appear is a stretch. However, to think that you're thinking things and that's not affecting your body and how you feel and your emotions and whether you sleep well and whether you're healthy or not. No, it does. Absolutely. There's a relationship because we are embodied chemicals. Like, we don't think or feel without it being our body that's doing all of that. And there being massive reactions happening throughout our body, cascading every time we think and feel. It's important to our survival. You know, we need to feel stressed out to survive. But when we do it chronically, we will make ourselves ill.
Will you be pleased to know that I don't actually think you've got this monkey flu that's been going around. So I suppose all I can really do for you is prescribe a placebo. Have you taken them before?
Well, no, yeah. But a placebo's not a drug, right. Is it?
No,
well,
it isn't.
Has no actual effect.
No, that's right.
The patient thinks that they're taking a medicine, but actually it's just a vitamin C tablet or something,
that's
isn't it?
Exactly what it is, yeah.
But I think I need something more than that.
Be surprised. You see, in these clinical tests, they find that placebos actually often have exactly the same effect as the drug that they've been brought in to replace. So just give it a
that's
a bit
when
of
the patient thought that they were taking a real drug.
Yes, that's
it's
right.
It's a psychological effect.
That's right, yeah.
Well, you've already told me you're going to give me a placebo, so it's not going to work, is it?
No, it isn't.
You were telling me recently how a physical ailment or, you know, troubles that you're having kind of vanished?
Yeah, yeah. It sort of did, yeah. The power of... I think I could sum it up. You can only focus on so many things at once, right? So I think it has to do a lot with that, mainly. Certain things were bothering me, but then I think that it's kind of hardwired in my DNA as a person and how I see in things that I have like a tendency to like hyperfixate, whether it's good or bad emotions. Good feelings or bad feelings physically, they tend to get blown out of proportion in my mind. So when maybe I'm feeling like physical pain, it's like not as bad as I'm actually feeling it. And like, I need somebody to like snap me out of it. And in this instance, it was a doctor. I mean, I don't really remember what he said that snapped me out of it, but it snapped me out of it.
So this doctor's advice helped you break your hyper-focus on the situation?
Yeah, I would say that.
And that didn't have anything to do with facts? Was there a certain fact that was it?
Well, yeah, I mean, he was like, well, I don't see anything that's wrong within in this thing, whatever, da-da-da.
No physical evidence.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of got me out of like my head where it tend to like spiral, or I tend to spiral, I guess, in any kind of way, whether it be like producing a song and hearing very minute details that may actually exist, but certain things could be, you know, fake problems. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, some of them are valid as well, but it just depends. It just has to do with hyperfixation and kind of breaking hyperfixation when it's not serving me. That's the distillation.
There might have been like a kind of like placebo effect.
Yeah, that's like the testament of the psychology of like the mind and ability to be molded. I don't know, like an idea. Like the idea molds your brain. In a way, you know? I don't know. There's like thoughts and then there's like that middle space and then there's like actions and all that shit. So it's more so in the thought area. There's a lot of more like feedback and echo, and I try to get out of that when it doesn't serve me.
You're talking about how your ideas form your brain in a sense. So if you have a high focus on an idea, you kind of almost, you bring it more into manifestation in a sense, or you're paying attention to it more.
Exactly. It's a classic, like, creative curse.
And is that kind of explain the placebo effect?
Maybe it's like activating the same kind of something that kind of builds some type of salvation idea, or this is possible and it's going to work. It can work to the positive and it can work to the negative, too. You got to have the imaginations if you want to manifest ideas into physical or, in my case, digital things.
Let
are many lessons to be learned from nature and from the universe through which our world spins. Chief among these is the fact that the world is changing rapidly. As we humans strive to keep pace with these changes, the development of the human mind becomes increasingly crucial to our survival.
What I began to study in graduate school was psychosomatic health. If the mind can make you sick, the mind can make you well. And that's essentially the basis of the research that I and several hundreds of researchers now are working on within an area called behavioral medicine.
She's one of a growing number of women working at the highest levels of responsibility in the scientific community of NASA. Her research will help to unravel some of the mysteries of survival in outer space.
In order to thrive in space, we have to learn how to expand our minds in order to use that mind power to find ways to adapt as space travelers or explorers.
Well, there will be limits to that.
But I wonder what we can do as a species to enhance this amazing
mind-body connection. The more we study these relationships, we're still learning so many things about our brains, about our neurology, the relationships between emotions we have and different systems of our body and how that promotes health or ill health. So I think continuing to learn about all those things, but then also making them widely available, not in disinformation fashions, in ways that are credible. I've been lucky enough to discover practices. The one that I know the best is yoga.
Might be dancing. It might be skiing. It might be swimming. It might be just being still in a dark room, thinking about nothing.
You made a list of things that definitely are good for promoting that balance and getting out chronic stress from your system.
And invoking the placebo effect in your own life, every day.
Yes, exactly.
Mind is matter.
We hope you have enjoyed this excursion through the Kaleidoscope Gallery, and that you'll join us again next time.
You have been listening to the Kaleidoscope Gallery.